You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and you'll hear it in my voice throughout the show. I am excited to talk to Kenneth Nicholson, quite the painter, and I'll tell you right off the bat, thinker, and we're going to talk a little bit about film, a little bit about music, a bunch about painting and art. Kenneth, welcome to the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Quite the pleasure. I wanted to ask you right off the bat, you've done various things around the arts, you teach, you paint, all that type of thing. When did you see yourself as an artist? Was the type of thing you're like, hey, you know, when you're a little kid, or did something happen one day where you're like, this is who I am?
Oh, I think it was definitely early on. I think gravitating towards drawing. My parents used to buy me Magna Doodles, which I'm not even sure is a thing anymore. But I used to wear those.
I hope they are.
I know they were like awesome. And I think as a kid, kind of like getting into that groove of not only being interested in art, but then I think over the years as I started growing up, kind of coming to this realization that it was like one of the things that I was actually invested in. And if I wanted to kind of move outside of a regular 9-to-5, which made me really miserable for a lot of my 20s and whatnot, then I kind of had to find a way to kind of embrace like those skills or those interests that I had been kind of involved with since I was younger.
Yeah, and I think that there's a bunch of things to talk to you about art-wise, but I just wanted to kind of give you like, I won't be able to describe this particularly well, but I'm going to give it a shot. In your paintings, they're amazing paintings. But one of the main things for me as a thinker that I love about them is that there's these pieces and there's this tone, and it provokes thought immediately about bodies and space. And, you know, it's just immediate. The feeling of the room, the feeling of the amount of light that's in there. And I'm just pulled right in. I know when you're talking about, your art. I've heard you talk about your art a bit, and about the notion of bodies and some aspects of displacement. What can you describe what you're trying to do with your paintings, or am I on target about how you're playing with bodies?
No, absolutely. You had a podcast episode a few episodes back with someone, and one of the first things that you were talking about with the artist, and the name's escaping me, was this idea of burnout. And from that,
Susie DeVille.
From that kind of sense of burnout was a great deal of like possibility and kind of creativity came from that. When I've always been interested in the figure, but as it, I think, starts for a lot of people kind of in that traditional sense of like the tableau and kind of working from life, working from different kind of like setting up different situations or images. And that's how I worked for the longest time, I think, throughout graduate school. And even though I always kind of moved into maybe more like melodramatic or maybe more kind of expressive areas, I, after graduate school, found that I was becoming like really, really burnt out with that type of painting, which was like really jarring for me because it was kind of like the one style of art that I always found spoke to me the most. And now it wasn't really speaking to me at all after I've just finished an extra 2 years of school. So I started to kind of indulge in the things that I was just interested in outside of what was considered, like, I guess, professional art making or like academic art making, that I'd kind of dive back into the different films that I loved, or how I would kind of collect different like album covers, or be interested in things like anatomy or old medical textbooks.
You were most excited by those things? Like, you went back towards, like, whether it's the album cover and the movies, like that was your zone, right?
Absolutely. And I think that zone is like really important, that it was like kind of just going back to what I enjoyed for the simple fact that I enjoyed it. There was really no thesis behind it or anything like that. And then as I kind of just steeped myself back in that kind of subject matter or those images, I started kind of working with these ideas of collage. A lot of times, like, I was teaching about like Burroughs and the cut-up method in the experimental film courses that I had. And I found that was like such a great way to introduce play back into my studio practice, because it was gone for the longest time. Studio, like working in the studio, became like a hassle. And that's like the worst thing I think in terms of like killing creativity or turning painting into the job that I didn't want in the first place. So dealing with those different ideas, finding ways to introduce the absurd, or taking all of these kind of disparate elements like of the body especially, but finding ways to combine different elements that might not make sense like on paper, or if you're kind of like introducing the ideas in terms of like trying to explain what is going on in the image. But what I think means a lot to me is, as you said, about like looking at the image and taking a bit of time with it, some of those different rabbit holes almost seem to open up in terms of different like associations or suggestions by the kind of collision of two different limbs or different elements of the body. And I found that really reignited how I approached painting and just making art in general. We had talked a little bit, I think, over email about how like different forms of art influenced.
Music. I was gonna yell at you. I'm like, what music's in the background? Music's in the background of painting? I heard an interview with you, Kenneth. I gotta tell you. You mentioned Mr. Bungle. Oh, good Lord. And what I love about Mr. Bungle, my name's Ken Vellante. They have an album, Disco Vellante. Hey, I love Mr. Bungle to begin with, Faith No More. I got to tell you one thing about Mr. Bungle. I was at a show in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a place called The Rave, and they opened up this weird basement area. It had three stages. The place was enormous. And they opened up this downstairs, which I'll just say out loud, I think wasn't proper or under regulation or legal or anything. And Mr. Bungle played in August in that basement, a wild show, of course. I will tell you, without any exaggeration, I believe the temperature in that place was at least 100 to 110 degrees inside. And so anytime I've talked to anybody about Mr. Bungle or shows of Mr. Bungle, I hear the wildest things. So anyways, not to throw all that Mr. Bungle in there, but
I think that's perfect.
Talk about the music. Talk about what you're thinking about the music and what you inhabit or what's there.
What a perfect way to listen to that music where you're in an almost fever state. Anyways, I think what that has to kind of like induce for me, Mr. Bungle was like one of my first introductions to jazz, whether or not I knew it at the time. Like, it was like a kind of jazz fusion take before I was really introduced to jazz at all. So for me, Mr. Bungle was such a great introduction to experimental music making and the avant-garde music making like approaches. But there was one on the first song on their first full-length album, the song Quote Unquote, which was called Travolta. I think he threatened to sue them. I listened to that song so many times and I loved it. And then I was going through the lyrics, and there's the "all behold the spectacle, fleshy, limbless rectangle." And this is a story basically just about this person, like, lacking limbs and without eyesight and without hearing, and how this individual is trying to communicate to you through the song or communicate to these people. It was just like, at the time, all these different aspects of, like, Cronenberg and this kind of, like, theatrical atmosphere that I had never heard before. And it was just me kind of going through the rabbit hole of listening to all the Faith No More that I could. So try to find some more Mike Patton things that would be new to me. And I think that that line especially has stuck out with me as I've been doing so much work. I have a show coming up, still getting down the dates between either January or February, at Stopwatch Gallery in Greensburg. And the title that kind of keeps ringing true is "Fleshy Limb-Filled Rectangles," because as I've been working and kind of like creating this series of, sometimes I'll call them just like my limb paintings, that's kind of the ideal, is to have like a gallery or a space filled with these fleshy limb-filled rectangles.
Wow. I had heard that quote, and I love how you talk about it. Immediately made me think, just in my unique experience, one more bit about the Mr. Bungle cover of their first album. The reason why it stuck out to me at that time, I was pretty obsessed with the comic series called Beautiful Stories for Ugly Children. And that independent series was kind of like wild stories and simple drawings and paintings within it, kind of a almost like a small comic book picture book type of thing, and bizarre stories. And the artist who did that did their first cover there. So I was actually drawn visually to Mr. Bungle, not knowing what it was, from comic books. Mm-hmm. It's just a weird little thing there.
But I think, man, that's also one of my favorite things about kind of going through the rabbit hole of like a certain obsession or like a certain thing that you're interested in, and kind of going back to feeling burnout in my studio practice. That's what I was kind of looking for again, like where you find like a certain artist or like a comic series or like a set of album covers. For me, when I growing up, it was like so different at the time. So like growing up in like the kind of like the 90s and like the 2000s, where like going and physically getting a CD or an album, the cover art meant so much more, because you were much more inclined, I think, to buy an album based off of nothing else but the image that was kind of calling out to you. Yeah. And there was a band called Carcass that I loved. And it was through those album covers that seemed, they were just basically collages of medical textbook images. And if like down like at the local mall, like you could get the album, but it usually had like a slip cover of something else that you could you could see the other like cover underneath of it. So it was like, how enticing is that? To kind of see like those different elements of the whole band is basically making up lyrics that are just kind of cut and paste, almost like Dada poems of just medical terminology. Incredible. And when you would like listen to them talk about their albums, they would sometimes argue about what the song was about, because no one really knew. The like, lyrics weren't really kind of pointing to anything specific, but each member of the band had a different idea of what the album, I think the one album, Necrotism Discanting the Insalubribus or something. It just, I watched the drummer and the singer kind of argue about what that meant. For the like 20 years had a different idea. Like,
that's not what you told me it meant when we were drinking that whiskey that night. You said it meant something else. You said it.
But I was like, I think that kind of like detachment from there having to be a one particular reading of this,
yeah,
or that still that like element of play, that they were very interested in this kind of like subversive imagery and kind of like subject matter for what they were working on, and that was like the fuel for what they were doing.
Yeah,
and I've always kind of like gone back to those.
Yeah, and I appreciate you mentioned the covers. I had the experience just recently with my son, and it was kind of like interacting what you said, like the physical media. I have one of my vehicles just has CDs, and I like it that I can just use CDs there because I still use my CDs for that vehicle. And he's a polite young man, and he says PFP, which is porno for pyros. I always just said porno for pyros, but it's more proper, say PFP. And he was able to see the dang thing that I got 30 years ago, like, you know, the, you know, just like albums or something, you know, where you get the art on the front, and he's just looking at it. He says, this is like the regular one. Yeah, when it first came out, this is what it was. And it was kind of enraptured by it. And I'm like, wow, that's, you know, I'm just watching it, you know, it's pretty cool.
It's so different to hold it, to like sit and to like come home for the first time holding like Iron Maiden's Killers or like the first Danzig album. I used to kind of just sit and look at the cover of it, the kind of that graphic kind of like demon, kind of like almost like a print. I'm not even really sure.
What. Yeah, no, it's just black and white. Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, it was just like, that's what used to fuel my art making. Before it was like a job or like homework, it was just kind of sitting and seeing if I could like reproduce one of those images. And I think that's really easy to forget, like why we get into like work. You had asked me on like the email about like, when did I see myself as an artist? And then just like, you kind of keep going, like unfolding back through the years and thinking about all the different just experiences of kind of being immersed in art.
When were you an artist and what you were doing, or you didn't see yourself, but you were and what you were doing. And that reflective piece. Speaking of reflection, need to hit you with a big question. Speaking with Kenneth Nicholson here, and the question for him is, what is art?
So this comes up a bunch. And so I teach a lot of college courses, but when I'm teaching like 2D design or like drawing or painting one, this comes up quite a bit in terms of trying to, especially within 2D design, for so much of what we're doing is related to problem solving and trying to have them really cultivate certain critical thinking skills. I think art at its base core, like the starting point, is this way of self-expression. And I think that's something that we can all agree with within the class. But for me, what's important is finding, or what's more helpful, I guess, for me, is finding other reasons for making art, or kind of even going a little bit further. The last podcast you had, the last episode, was talking about ways to heal.
Yeah.
And art as like a kind of healing mechanism. And I think that's becoming more and more important as we've become like so much more attuned to talking about things like mental health and things like that. For me, like drawing as a way to either calm down or kind of zone out, which is itself, I think, like a way of healing. That kind of like dissociation, that for me was like really a lot of times when I found myself kind of just drawing almost compulsively. But as I kind of like work my way through like teaching and finding different ways to kind of incorporate art into my career, I think art is a great vehicle for problem solving and making decisions and kind of taking those elements of self-reflection and finding a way to like utilize them like in everyday life.
Yeah, I've heard the expression at times, and I just picked up when you said as far as problem solving, which sounds just not as stimulating because you don't think you're solving problems, but all the different ways you are reconciling and or healing or solving problems, whether it's compulsion to do, to go into that activity for this amount of time to get it out, or whether it's to go through the process and inhabit it more slowly, however you do it. I think that's what's exciting to me about art, and where I've learned about over the years, not having formal training so much within the arts, but just self-study and conversations with artists. We talked a bit about art in context and various ways, in terms of healing and its role in kind of helping us as humans. But I want to ask about the role of art. What do you think the role of art is for us, and has it changed? If the world feels different in 2022 right now, is the role of art changed in your opinion?
Oh, absolutely. I think the role of art throughout history always seems to change, whether it be artists as a communicator or artists as a storyteller, artists as shaman, artists as craftsperson. And then as we kind of like go through all of these different like unfoldings or other machinations, I'm not sure at the moment like what the role of the artist is in terms of having just like one singular purpose. I think one of the interesting things about looking at art currently is how absolutely scattered the definition is and how gray and blurred some of the lines have become, which for me makes it all the more exciting when we kind of see that fine art, graphic design, art therapy, media, social media, especially, like, man, there's, I think, more than ever before, way fewer distinctions between what counts as what. And I think that's really disturbing. Yeah. A lot of people. And I like, which makes, I think, a lot of sense. But I also think it's nothing new. I think as times develop, the role of the artist always has to either also develop or keep up, or kind of like mutate with it. And I think if like the role of the artist is really slippery or kind of like fuzzy, I think that says a lot about the time.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've heard so much over the last couple of years is how, especially throughout the pandemic, the arts have been kind of gutted financially in terms of like budgets in a lot of schools and a lot of places. But one of the things that helped keep us sane throughout the pandemic was the arts. That was one of the things in terms of like recreating works from museums and posting those, or kind of zoning out to films or TV shows. There's this kind of like dual, there's like a dependency we have on art, but this lack of wanting to respect it as being as it is for all of us. I think if there was one particular role that artists play at the moment, I'm not exactly sure what that even would be in terms of like a definition.
Well, but I think I heard in what you're saying, which I think brings an important dynamic, is that the role, might reflecting the times or what needs there are from people and what their relationship is with creativity and art as a culture. You know, if it's celebrated in forefront, then it's going to feel different than when you have to fight for your space, no matter what. So where it stands in culture. Hey, before I ask you why there's something rather than nothing, I have a different thing. A question. I'm a huge, huge fan of the movie The Thing, and I've heard you talk about it. And maybe the question is, why is The Thing so great? Why is John Carpenter's The Thing so great of a movie?
And I think there are a lot of reasons why that movie is so, for me, memorable and so wonderful. As we kind of, one of the things that seems to always come up when people talk about why there hasn't been another movie like The Thing in so long. I think when we listen to like the commentary for that film, which I always have film commentaries going on in the background of the studio, because more so than music, like podcasts and commentaries help me kind of drift off into whatever I'm doing much more easily.
Yeah.
But throughout that film, they really didn't have a lot of like supervision. I think there was like a lot of like dangerous like workplace situations with special effects, and just like no one really was, I don't think, really managing them because of locations of where they were. Uh-huh. But I also think just with John Carpenter, he was always open to, I think, chasing his own inspirations in terms of the films that he loved and the kind of experience in the movies that he wanted to make. If you watch a lot of like interviews, there's a really wonderful interview on YouTube somewhere of Cronenberg, John Carpenter, and the director that did American Werewolf in London, for some reason.
Landis.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's so interesting to see Carpenter's kind of own perspective at around that time of like what experience he wanted for the audience. And it always seems like he wanted something that was just out of grasp. And I think that's why in that period of time, those movies of his were so inventive, because he was ambitious, not in terms of like being popular. He wasn't really ambitious in terms of like, let's make the most amount of money. But with those, like especially earlier set of films of his, it was just this kind of like ambition to make a film that for him kind of like stacked up to his ideals of what a great film should be. And he kind of chased that dragon throughout that whole period of time. I think with The Thing, he also had a lot of people that he kind of gave creative leeway to. And I think that kind of helped everything kind of blossom all the more. You have all these wonderful actors. From what I remember, this special effects department were fairly like newcomers in a way that had a lot to prove. And if I'm remembering that correctly, so it's like you get this sense of all of this possibility that opens
potential,
up by
potential.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Art studio potential in spots.
Yeah. It's like the first week of like a new school when the semester starts. And if like, and it's kind of like a, there's like an electricity like in the air because everyone's kind of like excited to get started. That's the one thing. That's what I think of why that movie's. I think the subject matter is always going to be intriguing. I think how it kind of throughout time, we've thought of that movie as meaning or like being a stand-in for different things, like whether like different diseases or.
Yeah, like virus or imposters or body switching.
It's something that you can always kind of find a way to kind of connect to like current events somehow with that movie, for as kind of outlandish and as sci-fi as it is, it's still so rooted in things like paranoia, which never go away. We always feel like as a society or like group of societies to kind of just be at odds with the what ifs of kind of like working with each other. And that movie, for as many times as I see it, it's just like an incredibly fun ride in being incredibly uncomfortable at the same time.
Yeah. I love that. Oh, what a great description. And it's kind of capturing the energy around it. Hey everybody, Kenneth Nicholson on The Thing on Something Rather Than Nothing. Speaking of which, moving to the next question, Kenneth, why? I ask it now, why is there something rather than nothing? But it's come up too where people want to ask, how is there something rather than nothing? I give you either one of those, which I don't know if I've done before for approach, but what's the deal?
I would say why there's something rather than nothing because there's possibility when we have something. There's like more room to have options. I think one of the things that I kind of talk about in class is like when we go throughout history and kind of like learn from other art movements or learn from other artists, we see that like they oftentimes have these choices on having like a kind of creative reaction to something versus like a destructive reaction to something. Uh-huh. When we're talking about the Bauhaus in my 2D design class, I say what made them so dangerous at the time and why they were shut down was because they were making creative choices to kind of move forward, like with what they were kind of being, like the kind of cards that they were given at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think if you choose the creative option, that is always going to give you more to work with. When you have something rather than nothing, then there is a sense of possibility. And I think that's better than anything, to actually have an option of two different directions to move from. That's like the artist's ideal.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, and certainly certainly thought-provoking. I find that the answers I've been thinking about in terms when we're talking about art and creativity, which is a different context for asking this question, really kind of digs into creativity and something and how we form things for others, you know, fundamentally. And man, I really enjoyed talking with you. But before we let you go, Kenneth, tell the listeners where they find your work. You know, like I said, your marvelous paintings. Everybody, you know, go see for yourself. Tell them how they do that, Kenneth.
Thank you very much. I am most active on Instagram. The username Grossferatu with three S's.
Great.
You can find my artwork on kennethnicholsonart.com. On Instagram, it's mostly works in progress and things like that, but the finished pieces always end up on the website.
Yeah. Hey, just been a great pleasure to talk to you about, you know, a few different things. And I can see when we're talking about, and I'd love to talk to you again. Just the pieces where, you know, where the art's slipping from one form to the other, you know, and I really picked up on what you're saying about as far as how, you know, seeing album covers. I think some about, I might have indulged myself in the same area very much with comic books and sequence and comic book covers. And when you were talking about the records, which I love records as well, I realized there's so much overlap in thinking about what the visual presentation of that audio thing is with an album. So it's I love that.
It's an oddly lost art. I think like we get DVD covers and we have album art, but man, it is, I don't think it carries the same weight for who picks up the art as it used to. I think like video stores are always something I think back to being so, always feeling like incredibly safe in, like a video store or like a rental shop as well. And I like those places don't really exist in the same capacity as they used to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great topic, and I've enjoyed talking to you with Kenneth. Great pleasure. Thank you for your art. And everybody, check out Kenneth's art. If you haven't seen The Thing, go watch The Thing. We're recording this in October. October is a great month to watch The Thing. Beautiful Stories for Ugly Children. If you can find those out of print copies, your Mr. Bungles, everything. So thank you, Kenneth, and hope to chat with you again soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Take care.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.